Yeah.
All right, good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us on the last day of the conference at the earliest session possible. I appreciate you being here. We're here today to talk about application lifecycle management in Office and SharePoint. Everybody hear me okay? Okay, great. So my name is Eric Sharon. I'm a regional architect at Microsoft, and I have with me Ayman El-Hateb as a technical manager at AppPoint. And we're going to begin today by doing just some brief introductions.
Good morning. So my name is Ayman El-Hateb. I work as technical services manager at AppPoint, Middle East and North Africa. I'm a SharePoint MVP and ALM Ranger. I'm author, blogger, speaker, and I've contributed to SharePoint 2013 Unleashed, SharePoint 2010 Unleashed, and I came all the way from Egypt to be with you here, guys. So I hope you'll enjoy it. Eric?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Eric Sharon. As I said, I'm a regional architect at Microsoft. I do work with the SharePoint Rangers and the ALM Rangers. Author, blogger, speaker, been at Microsoft for about 10 years in the business productivity space. And I was having a conversation with a customer or a colleague just how long I've been around SharePoint. And so we kind of started going back and forth, well, do you remember Tahoe? And I said, nope, I remember Digital Dashboard. And then I said, actually, I go way back before Digital Dashboard, and I was actually programming Outlook today. So that's how long I've been around SharePoint, and it's been a crazy ride. So with today's session, I think what we wanted to impart to you is that this application model for SharePoint is brand new. And we have a lot of customers that are having pain, and we'll talk about that customer pain, but we really want to impart to you how Office and SharePoint application development works and what are the considerations in a team-based environment for being able to be effective and develop the application as well as deploy it and actually realize quality in your builds as you deploy it into production. So the goal is to take application lifecycle management principles, which we've got in spades for full trust code and in SharePoint 2010 timeframe, and then talk to you about how to adapt those principles and development practices for SharePoint apps using the SharePoint app model. One of the key takeaways is that we understand and what we want to impart to you is that the application model is here to stay. There are always ways to apply ALM practices to these types of solutions, and especially the app model solution. So let's talk about what the journey has been. And I'm sure that a lot of us can kind of commiserate with the journey and the experiences that I'm about to go through in terms of application development. For those of us that have been around SharePoint for some time, we know that in 2003, there really wasn't a concept of an application. Some people were doing web part development in SharePoint 2003, but the API made it super hard to be able to do that. And so what we saw is people using SharePoint just for what it was used for, or what it was made for, just the in-product features. And investments were made in content, not necessarily writing apps that were deployed into SharePoint. In 2007, we released a full-blown server-side API, and SharePoint 2007 became a development platform. And from a Microsoft perspective, it kind of caught us by surprise about how many people were actually building apps and solutions on top of SharePoint. And in fact, for those of you that have been around since 2007, there was virtually no guidance from us, from Microsoft, around how to deploy and develop apps. So you guys were kind of finding these things out in the field as we went along, and we quickly did as much as we could to put guidance out there around how to develop apps for SharePoint 2007. But they were primarily custom server-side code, right? They were full trust solutions, they deployed into SharePoint, and for better or for worse, they ran alongside of SharePoint. In 2010, we know that we learned our lesson, right? So some of the code that was deployed into SharePoint 2007, if it didn't follow good team practices or code quality practices, you might have deployed a solution or a web part that had a memory leak. And that might have brought the entire server farm down, right? Anyone remember that? I know I've done it. Sorry if you're maintaining my code that I've done that. So what what Microsoft did is we tried to react, right? And we did. We produced 2010. And what we tried to do is make the system, make SharePoint, protect itself. So if bad things were happening in the full trust code solution, or more importantly, the sandbox solution, we could reach in and shut that application down. We could also prevent against large list queries. We would shut that down. So we allowed SharePoint 2010 to protect itself. The biggest challenge in that regard, though, is that there was a challenging user experience when those bad things happened and SharePoint protected itself. But largely, you could argue that the greater good was done. SharePoint stayed up, people could still check in and out documents, and bad activities were hopefully shut down. In the 2013 timeframe, We know that we want customers to migrate away from full trust code. All of the challenges with full trust code were there. Even if you wrote a web part in the 2010 timeframe and deployed it into SharePoint, and you didn't use the sandbox model, the challenges of full trust code running in SharePoint still happened, right? So if you produced code that had a memory leak, it would still have an effect and put memory and resource pressure on the farm. And so in the 2013 timeframe, Microsoft said, wow, we got to get apps outside of SharePoint. We want SharePoint to run and not to have to think about or worry about memory pressure from applications or DLLs or assemblies that are running alongside SharePoint. And so we didn't really invent anything new. And in fact, a company called Facebook came along and made this really popular at enterprise class scales. It's basically taking the app outside of the product and surfacing it in the product, but letting it run elsewhere. So if we take a look at understanding, I mean, the application model's new, it's here to stay, that's terrific, Microsoft, but we also understand as Microsoft that there are challenges in the customer space, right? So many of us, once you return to your day jobs, after learning about the application model, you're all jazzed up to write your app model, you realize that there's this other stuff out there that you already have. So for customers that are on 2007, 2010, and adopting 2013, if you take a look at your stack of applications, you probably have any combination of these technologies, Visto, full trust code, sandbox solutions, and maybe some apps that use the app model. But there's little guidance on how to choose the right solution and then when to migrate. How do you migrate from a full trust code a component into the application model? And I don't think that there's a magic answer. We do know that full trust code still has its place. There are things that you can do with full trust code that can't be done with the app model. The goal is not to say, listen, I need to take this DLL and migrate it to the app model. But it's to take a holistic look at the features and functionalities that comprise the full trust code and figure out a way to do it in the app model. But there's pain with full trust code and sandbox solutions, and customers also have, from the Office side, you may have deployed an Outlook add-in or Word add-in, and that's very similar to managing an executable, right? So if you take a look at the pain with full trust code, it's a very, very powerful surface to program against. The challenge is that it goes in and lives with the server and takes up SharePoint resources. And we put out a significant amount of effort in the SharePoint 2010 timeframe to tell you guys how to write code so that it doesn't do that, how to infuse quality, what the ALM principles are around full trust code. But we also know that there are the performance considerations. Even if you write a perfect DLL, it's still taking up server resources. There's also the platform rigidity argument in which when you upgrade SharePoint, when the latest CU comes out, you should be regression testing all of your apps against that CU. Now, the rigidity aspect comes in is when you have 5 or 6 different full trust solutions and you want to receive the benefits of a fix, you now have to go along and have a much longer elongated testing cycle. Because you want to make sure that you're in a patching or migration scenario, that your apps, your full trust code, works with the latest CU. And then, as we know, there's an inability to move these customizations into Office 365. So if you wanted to leverage the cloud benefits that you saw during the keynote and all those types of things, most of your full trust code will not migrate. From a sandbox perspective, how many people have written sandbox solutions and have been happy with the API surface? Well, look at all those hands go down. Many people have tried it, few people have been satisfied. I'm one of those people. I tried to do the right thing, but the API surface was so small that it really wasn't realistic to write a functional app against it. So small API footprint was a challenge, increased complexity of the environment setup and management. There was an instance where you could take the sandbox process and move that to alternate infrastructure as part of the farm, but now you're managing additional boxes and a bigger farm footprint. There's a challenging user experience when we reach in and take the guts out of an app that's behaving badly. People are kind of like, whoa, so your CIO is like, wow, the app had a memory leak and it was shut down, that's not good. And we now know that we're not investing in sandbox solutions that run code, right? The WSPs are still there, all those solutions are there, but sandbox solutions that use the API are kind of going away. From an Office perspective, we kind of talked about this, right? It's required touching desktops, they weren't device agnostic, and it's basically like you're managing an executable. And so while you had the ability to integrate with Office, that became very challenging. In fact, you might argue that managing an executable, deploying an executable to desktops is a lot easier because those desktop apps don't necessarily have to integrate with an application suite like Office. So you had all that responsibility of managing a custom app deployed to machines. And there could be, you know, we all know what the challenges are about managing dependencies on the user's machine. So that's pretty much the pain that we saw with the office. So I'm going to assume that most people in here are familiar and have been successfully indoctrinated about what the application model actually is. Customizations run outside of SharePoint. You have the ability to upgrade and patch SharePoint independently, potentially, of your actual application, so you lose that platform rigidity, which is a good thing. The implementation and independence of your stack, meaning that you could use any number of technologies and development languages to create a SharePoint app. That includes JavaScript, HTML, and standards-based technologies, as well as Ruby, PHP, and C#. The solutions can be deployed in Office 365 and on-prem, and I think that's going to be a prevailing message. So even though you're not building for Office 365, if your organization can't use the cloud, you should still use these principles because you want to make your app cloud-friendly, so that when it does have to move potentially one day to Office 365, it's a pickup and drop. It's not rewriting the app. There are some challenges with the app model. A lot of the rich events that we had with full trust code are just not there. So the question becomes, from an implementation perspective, is it really a new world with this application model? Because, Eric, you're telling me that the app model's brand new, but you're telling me about technologies that I grew up when I graduated college, at least for old guys like me. When I graduated college, I was writing classic ASP using these technologies. They're back again, but there's a level of discipline that has to be combined with the implementation. So hopefully we're not going to see a resurgence of apps with the spaghetti code that I grew up writing. Customers can't port or wrap their app in the application model, meaning that there is no button or like a full trust code upsizing wizard into the app model. You actually have to take a look at this as a migration of functionality and trying to find a way to replace functionality in your full trust code with a SharePoint app or an Office app. The other challenge is, what do I do with all this stuff that I have? Eric, I've got a on-premises implementation of SharePoint, and I've got some critical InfoPath forms with code behind. I've got web parts that do site membership. I've got a provisioning app. Like, what do I do with all that code? Do I instantly have to lightning bolt this stuff into the app model and throw everything out? And so the answer is, it depends. It depends on how well your features are being used, or how much they're being used, and whether or not you can kind of retire some of those things, let them die on the vine, and move to a brand new farm and deprecate the old farm. The other thing is, for Office 365 folks, if your organization uses the platform, which we hope it does, you're programming against a refreshing platform. So it's something to keep in mind, that you don't have to have these big bang releases. You can do incremental app releases, and that the bits that you deploy your app on today in multi-tenant may not be the same that is running on tomorrow. So those are things to keep in mind. I'm going to go through this really quickly. I'm assuming 200 level, most folks know the type of apps, the SharePoint apps that have different classifications, and then there's Office apps. The Office apps can be content pane apps, task pane apps, mail apps, and project apps. The different types of SharePoint apps, again, this is just a level set, and I'm sure most of you know this. Auto-hosted is deployed into Office 365 and runs in a dedicated Office 365 tenant. SharePoint hosted, the app is deployed into SharePoint, but all of the SharePoint implementation runs on the client using JavaScript and client-side code. And then there's provider-hosted, which is you bring your own application stack. So think Facebook and Farmville, right? Farmville is the provider-hosted stack, and Facebook is SharePoint. So when we think about application lifecycle management, right, which is what we're here to talk about, the way that Eamon and I think about this is, it's really a function of what makes developers productive. And we have to study how we're telling developers to use code and to write the application model code, and then figure out what the right way to infuse multiple developers and quality into that process. So we're going to talk a little bit now about what the development environments are, what Microsoft's philosophy, and what we'd like to see you guys use as a development environment. Regardless of whether or not you're developing an app for Office 365 or on-premises, you're going to be using Visual Studio, our hope and goal is that you use Office 365 developer site. The reason why we like to see people use an Office 365 developer site is how many people are still carrying around their own VM labs, like these giant machines with 64 gigs of RAM, power bricks, and yes. So our goal is to not have you carry around a miniature private cloud to develop with SharePoint. Our goal is for you to use the cloud for developing your app. And the developer site template is designed just to do that. You get one as part of MSDN. You can go grab one for like $99, or there's a trial for 30 days. But think of that in this new world, this new remote development model, where you're actually writing in Visual Studio on like an Ultrabook, and you're deploying into Office 365 in your development site. Regardless of whether your app is going to live there, you still have the option of using that as a development environment. Great point. So for the Napa tools, the Office 365 development tools, they're available only within Office 365 and only for Office 365 developer sites. A lot of questions usually arise around the Office 365 development tools. We'll definitely talk about what the considerations are of using that tool, and then how to use it in a team environment, or whether it can be used in a team environment. And we know that you can deploy all three types of SharePoint apps: SharePoint hosted, auto hosted, and provider hosted apps if you use Office 365. Let's say that you can't leverage Office 365 developer sites for your implementation, for your apps. You can also set up on-prem developer sites. That means you go and unfold and set up a SharePoint 2013 farm. You create multiple site collections of the developer site template. You're basically running your own miniature Office 365 development site on-prem. Still, the same type of remote development happens. If you notice that we can do SharePoint-hosted apps and provider-hosted apps, but using it on-prem, you can't develop auto-hosted apps. And there's no Napa in that environment. Now, for the folks that still have to support full trust code, which is probably the large majority of you, you're still going to be in the virtual machine space. So that lab that you carry around, or maybe there's a private cloud, hopefully, at this time in your organization, where virtual machines run for devs up there with full-blown versions of Windows and Office and a miniature AD that are connected to TFS or your source control, that still is going to be out there. And you can develop all three types of applications using the virtual machine methodology, including server-side code. So now that we understand the Microsoft philosophy, or the choices that you have around your development environment, let's talk about what happens if more than one developer needs to write code, or we want to make sure that we're following best practices in terms of building and deploying apps. So for me, application lifecycle management means that it's when more than one developer needs access to code, and it's a scenario in which we want to make sure that we're following established practices like continuous integration. Continuous integration is when you check in, builds happen, and we know right away whether or not any code that you check in damaged the sanctity or the validity of the build. So we used to require separate VMs and VM-capable hardware. Office 365 development size per developer can be used regardless of on-prem or Office 365 deployment of your app. And then in terms of Napa, what do you do with that in a team environment? We know that if you're using Office 365 developer sites, that we can use this basically Visual Studio for SharePoint apps in a browser. The challenge is that that's per developer, right? So if I have a Napa app that I'm creating, Ayman can't necessarily see that, right? So what we see Napa being used for a lot in a lot of companies is quick and rapid prototyping of SharePoint apps. At the point in which another developer needs to touch that, or becomes important that I don't lose versioning or anything like that, the goal will be to export that app into Visual Studio and check that into your source control system. So there's a break point between the times in which you're going to use Napa, and then you're going to transition into Visual Studio. Build processes are essential to application lifecycle management. So non-compile code needs to be built too. During continuous integration. So even if you have a SharePoint hosted app, which is all client-side code, the goal would be for you to take that app and deploy it into a target environment. Very little compilation happening there, because we're not writing necessarily any server side or a full trust code, but it still needs to have the build process go. The value of the build process tells us whether or not things are broken and that our app has quality. Build deployment and testing is still done by TFS with some help. How many people have ever tried to automate the deployment and found that they couldn't get past the TFS button, or the trusted button? Okay, a few people here. So Ayman has some really good news in that front, and we're going to be demoing that. And then the build is nothing without build verification tests. The ability to go in and inspect that the deployed code after it's been deployed and see that it's valid and that things are where they're supposed to be. Typically, we see a lot of customers use coded UI, build verification tests. That's recorded tests. So when your app gets deployed, it goes out to the SharePoint environment where it was deployed to, and it actually clicks around and makes sure everything's where it's supposed to be. So let's talk a little bit about solution deployment, and then we're going to hop into some really good demos. So this is a scenario in which you're deploying a SharePoint hosted app. So client-side code, you have JavaScript libraries, you have certs, you have features and the manifest and pages and all that good stuff. So using Team Foundation Server or Visual Studio Online, either one can actually you can actually create and use build definitions in. There's a link to in the back end of this presentation to the app and build definition files that you need to create a SharePoint app's build definition. Those are on CodePlex. It can consist of two files. The first is a workflow file that helps the build definition understand how to talk to SharePoint. The second one is a PowerShell script that basically tells SharePoint or the build process where to take the app and deploy it to. And that can be on-prem or in the cloud. And then we run, then TFS as part of the build definition will run the coded UI tests. For provider-hosted apps, we know that we have the SharePoint app component that gets deployed to the app web, but we also might have a web application, the ASP.NET MVC web app, or what have you. Same process, TFS will leverage those same critical build files and deploy the app into Office 365 or your on-prem SharePoint environment. At the same time, it'll deploy it into your provider-hosted infrastructure. Provider-hosted infrastructure could be in Azure, it could be on-prem, but the idea is that it's deploying those ASP.NET files, in my example, to an IIS server, which is your provider-hosted infrastructure. And then we have test execution. Hopefully everything goes well. So now it's time for me to take a break from talking, because I'm sure you guys are ready to see some fantastic demos. So we're going to demo continuous integration. I guess we can't get that close together.
Yeah.
We're going to demo some continuous integration for SharePoint-hosted and auto-hosted apps.
Okay, so today we have three demos to cover the different scenarios for continuous integration and continuous deployment for SharePoint apps. In our first demo, we'll create a build definition that, can you please switch off? So in our first demo, we'll be creating a build definition that builds and deploys a SharePoint hosted app. Our target environment is SharePoint 2013 on-prem. We'll be using TFS or Team Foundation Server 2013 on-prem as our ELM platform, and we'll be using a couple of developer site or sites based on the developer site template to serve as our development and testing environments. Here's the CodePlex project. Okay, here's the CodePlex project that Eric has just mentioned. It basically packages a set of PowerShell scripts and a build workflow that can help you quickly build and deploy your SharePoint hosted apps. It covers many scenarios, like it covers SharePoint hosted apps, auto hosted apps, and some scenarios for provider hosted apps. It can also cover deployment to SharePoint on-prem and Office 365 SharePoint online. Yeah, it works with both.
Can I repeat the question?
Yeah, but I'll be showing now the using Team Foundation Server on-prem, and in the next demo, TFS Service or Visual Studio Online. Okay, the documentation or the project is well documented on the website. It's office-sharepoint-ci.codeplex.com. And the setup is pretty straightforward. You have to download the project, then check it into your source control. In my case, I've copied the build process template or the build workflow Office Tools app template.xaml into the build process templates folder, and I've copied the deployment scripts into the deploy scripts folder. As you can see, it can help on SharePoint and Office apps. So for example, in the SharePoint apps folder, we'll find here the scripts that we need for deploying SharePoint apps. Okay. Let me show you the project that or the app that we'll be building and deploying. It's basically a pretty straightforward SharePoint hosted app. It has a no-code sandbox solution that packages a set of images, list definitions, list instances, pages, scripts, and so on and so forth. And here I have two environments, my dev environment or my dev site based on the developer site template, and a test environment or a test site. And here's the app. Let's quickly see it in action. It's called Sports League Manager. And this app is available on the App Store. Okay, while the app is loading, let me quickly show you what you need to do or what you need to modify to get this CodePlex project working for you. So we here have the parameters.ps1. This is the only file that you need to touch to make the deployment happen. Here you need to specify your credentials, your username, the password, and the domain name. And in case of Office 365, you'll need to leave the domain name blank because this is how the script understands whether you are deploying to SharePoint on-prem or SharePoint online. Here you need to enter the URL of your site. You can use any site based on a developer site template, or even if you are not using developer site templates, you can still use any other site, provided that you enable the site loading feature. Just to make sure or just to enable the site to accept app deployment, okay? In case of provider-hosted apps, you will need also to enter the server name of your provider or your web server that will host the web component, and the username and password to connect to the web server. Another consideration, if you are deploying to SharePoint Online, you will need to install the SharePoint Online management shell on your build control or on your build machine. Let's go back to our app. Here's the app. It's pretty straightforward. Let's quickly explore it because we'll be using it in different demos. I'll create a league from here. Then I can view the leagues, I can add teams, then add results, then view the league details, the league table, and so on and so forth. I've deployed this to my development environment using Visual Studio. Just click here and deploy. But what I'm going to do now is I'll create a build definition to build and deploy this app to my testing site. My testing site does not have any apps here. So let's quickly go to Team Explorer, Builds. I'll create a new build definition. Let's give it a name. Let's say BD, which stands for Build and Deploy, Sports League Manager _BD. We have several options for triggering the build definition. It could be manual, it can be continuous integration, which means that a build will be triggered upon each check-in. It can be a nightly build or based on a schedule. For demo purposes, I'll just leave it manual for now. Here are my source settings, which means all the source control folders that are required by my build workflow. Obviously, I need the solution root or the solution folder. It's in the SharePoint hosted apps, and the deployment scripts. Okay. Now it's asking me about the build controller, and I've already installed a build machine, and the process for installing or preparing a machine to act as your build controller is pretty straightforward, and it's documented on TechNet. I'm using a local build controller here, and then I need to choose a build folder, a folder that where the build outputs will be copied, like the app package, the WSPs, the test automation DLLs, and so on. It's hosted on my build machine. I have a folder called drops. Then the important part is the process. So Here I need to choose a build process template or a build workflow. Here's the list of available build workflows. And I need here to choose the build workflow that I've copied or I've downloaded from CodePlex. It's already in my source control, the build process templates, and this step should be done only once. I'll choose it. And this build workflow abstracts many information. So what you need to do, two things. Choose your solution file, and it has already been chosen by Visual Studio, the Sports League Manager .sln, and you need to choose the deployment script. And again, I've checked this into my source control in the deploy scripts, SharePoint app. Here's SharePoint app deploy.ps1. This, of course, is referencing the parameters.ps1 to know where it's going to deploy the app. I'll save it. And now I'm ready to trigger the build. Click new, queue new build. I'll accept the defaults. And now the build is running. Okay, while the build is running, let me show you this SharePoint app deploy.ps1 to understand more how it works. It basically references the parameters.ps1 file, and it's creating a client context, SharePoint client context, whether it's SharePoint online or SharePoint on-prem, getting a reference to the current web, then fetching all the app packages from the drop folder, if we have more than one app package, then basically it's installing all the app packages one by one. This function, install-app, sits in another script file, and this basically just uninstalls the app if it's already installed, and then it's using load and install app in a specified locale function, which is a .NET CSOM function wrapped inside PowerShell. And it uses this function for deployment the app. Then it writes some summary so that you can understand or monitor the status of the build and deployment. Let's go back and see. So it's now basically now installing the Sports League Manager app.
This is like a cooking show.
Yeah. I think we can take a question now.
Yeah, anybody have any questions while we're waiting for this build to run?
Yeah? Full trust code. Yes, there is another one. And if you go to
Let's repeat the question.
So the question was, is there a similar CodePlex project for full trust code or for full trust solutions for building and deployment? And the answer is yes. If you go to this CodePlex project, you'll find it in the references in our slide deck. When you go to this project, you will find a link or a reference to the FTC one. Sorry.
Repeat that question, please. The question is it available for TFS 2013? Yes, both for TFS 2013 on-prem as well as Visual Studio Online it works with.
Yeah.
The question is, will this upload the app to the App Store, or will it only sideload it?
No, this is just, you know, we're now pre-production.
Yes, that's a good point. Where we are in the story here is that we're now developing, right? So you and I and Eamon, we're actually writing code, and just we're making sure that nobody breaks anything, does anything bad, because you have to wear the I broke the build dunce hat. The way we typically, so the question is there a step beyond that, right? So when we actually do have a build that has been certified by the UAT or group or the testers, what type of continuous delivery or continuous deployment can we use to get there? So we didn't cover that in our session today. We do talk about it in terms of release management. Typically what we see, and I'll get to it in a sec or in, after we're done here, but we typically see release management still as a human-based activity, meaning that the developers won't touch, but we do. There is a science called continuous delivery or deployment, or those are actually two separate things, in which, as you have more revs of the app being deployed, because we're now on this evergreen platform, we don't have Big Bang releases any longer. You can actually now just say, yes, listen, I made a change, it's gonna flow all the way through, UAT tests or tests run, no UAT required, it's gonna go to the store.
So we're basically here talking about pre-production. And there is a tool called InRelease that Microsoft acquired, or it's the Microsoft naming is Microsoft Release Management, that can take care of this, this automation. But still, you'll need some manual intervention, because it's not a good idea to have app automatically deployed to the production environment. Okay.
Let's move on. We'll have questions at the end.
Yeah. So now I need to trust the app. Trust it. And I'm on my testing site now, right? Open the app. And quickly test it. And it works okay. Okay, so this was our first demo. As I told you, the PowerShell scripts and this CodePlex project covers many scenarios. But the scenario that it cannot cover is deploying provider-hosted app with a provider-hosted component in Windows Azure. So this is our second demo.
Yep, so that's what we're gonna talk about now.
Yeah.
Hey, it's us.
Yeah. Okay. So in this demo, this demo is all in the cloud, which means that my TFS is in the cloud. My target environment is Office 365. Even the provider-hosted component will be in Windows Azure. Even the virtual machine that you're seeing now is a Windows 8 virtual machine in Windows Azure Infrastructure as a Service. We are at the mercy of the internet connection. Fingers crossed.
We have videos as a backup.
Yeah, don't worry.
Something goes bad.
Okay. So here's our target environment, spcdev.sharepoint.com. And here's my dev machine on Windows Azure. And here is TFS service or Visual Studio Online. I've created a team project called SPC. And here you can see that we have 25 minutes of build available for us. Visual Studio Online comes with a hosted build controller, so you don't have to install a build controller locally. In our first demo, we have used a local build controller. Now we are on the cloud, we don't even need a build machine. Okay, here's the app. That my provider hosted app that I'll be using basically has a SharePoint component and a provider hosted component. Let me quickly enter the.
It wouldn't be a demo if Office 365 didn't ask us for passwords.
I was just telling Eric that I forget the passwords during the demos, so hopefully it will work.
That's not going to happen right now.
Okay. So I'm going to do, let me show you the app first. I'll go to site contents. And here's the app, basic data operations. It has the default icon or logo. And now, here is the provided hosted component. It's basically a very basic app that from which you can check the lists in your app web and create new lists, check the list items, and so on.
And I noticed that you didn't bring the Chrome in. You could have brought the SharePoint Chrome in if you wanted to.
Of course.
But if you notice the way that the URL is structured, we're actually visiting an Azure website, but the context and the CSOM context is still carried through. Because you can actually see the return URL for the SharePoint host.
Yeah. And it's basic data operations.azure websites.net. And here's the basic data operations website in the Windows Azure management portal. And here's my app. What I'm going to do now is I'll do very quick visual changes and see how we can automatically deploy this, okay? So I'll check out my app manifest.xml. And I'm gonna change the logo. I have this one. And I'll do another change in the web component. These guys are having very much fun. Okay, let's say SPC 14 site list. So I've basically done a couple of changes to my SharePoint component and the web component. I'm not going to check this into source control now because I want to show you continuous integration and deployment. Before doing this, I'll go to my basic data operations site, Azure site, and I'll integrate this with TFS Online or Visual Studio Online. Use Visual Studio Online. And here's my Visual Studio Online account, SPC demo. I'm going to authorize it now, accept. Now I need to choose a team project. I have SPC as the only project. And now it's linking the Visual Studio Online team project with my website. Okay, to make sure that this has succeeded. I'll go to Visual Studio Online, go to my profile. In the connections, we'll see that now Windows Azure is authorized to access Team Foundation Server Online or Visual Studio Online through OAuth. Okay. If I go now to my Team Explorer, I don't have any builds, right? I don't have any build definitions. If I refresh, I'll find that this connection has created a build definition for me called basic data operations underscore CD or continuous delivery. I'll edit this build definition, enable it, and leave it as continuous integration. I'll change the source settings. Choose my provider hosted app. And in the build defaults, I'm using the hosted build controller. And the process from which or upon which the build definition has been created is a new build process template called TFVC Continuous Deployment Template.12.xaml. And it's very handy and very useful. We need to do only three things. The first one is choosing the project. I'll choose the whole solution, of course. And in the deployment part, we'll see that it already connected TFS to Windows Azure website. So here we'll find that it has already created a Windows Azure subscription file. Here it is, and it's referring to the website. Here's the website name. So I don't need to do anything for the Windows Azure part or the website part. But here I need to do a very quick, or I need to create a very quick deployment settings file for SharePoint. So I'll give it a name, SPC273. Here's the SharePoint URL, SPC demo. SharePoint.com and the username. And the password. Now it knows where it should deploy SharePoint app and the web the provider hosted component. I'm going to save it. being saved. And now I will check in all the changes.
And so what we're going to see is you check this in, a build process will be kicked off.
Exactly.
An deployment process.
Now it's checking in. I'll go to my builds. Now it has been triggered. So while this triggers, we can take one question. No. This is the question is about the build process template, right? Yeah. The question is this build process template part of the CodePlex project? And the answer is no. It's actually part of Visual Studio Online. This is actually something that has been released just like 2 or 3 weeks ago. This build process template. So when you connect your Windows Azure website with Visual Studio Online, you'll get this build definition for free, and it's based on this build process template. Okay.
Question back here?
Yeah?
We'll talk about that next.
Yeah.
The question was, if you're building a development or a testing, infrastructure, whether it's an Office 365 or on-prem, what's the recommendation? Well, I guess this would be for Office 365. What's the recommendation? Should I have separate tenants? Should I have site collections with the same tenant? I'm going to talk about that actually next.
Okay, while waiting for the build, this is Visual Studio Online. How many of you folks had ever tried Visual Studio Online? Okay, yeah. Okay, so Visual Studio Online is basically a way, or it's like TFS as a service. So here we had the code. You can start exploring the code, checking the history of the code, comparing different versions. You can organize your work items from here. You can create new work items. Here's the board. Here's the backlog view. You can create new product backlog items or moving them between sprints. You can trigger a new build from the web interface. If I click on the basic data operations, we can right-click and queue build or view builds. You can also execute test cases from the browser. You can create new test cases and execute them either in the browser or using the testing client, Microsoft Test Manager. Let's see if this completed. Not yet.
Still baking.
Yeah, but if we go to Windows Azure Management Portal, we'll find that it's tracking now the status as well. It's saying it's deploying.
So from a cloud-based perspective, there's a lot of integration between all of the different types of configuration points between Azure, the Azure dashboard, Visual Studio Online, because it used to be called TFS Online, as well as Visual Studio. So a lot of plumbing that naturally happens in the cloud.
Still deploying. As you have seen, as we're using a Windows 8 machine without SharePoint installed, infrastructure as a service. We're using Office 365, basically software as a service, and we are using Windows Azure, which is a platform as a service. So everything is in the cloud.
Want to do a slide and then we'll come back to this?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that. So we'll come back to watching the build process happen. But there was a question in the audience around testing, right? So if I have a Office 365 environment, where do I deploy my apps to? We know that many customers have a integration testing environment, which sees a lot of churn. We have a UAT environment. What's the best practice? Should those be different tenants? Should they be, what are the pros and cons of doing that? I think in terms of testing, we know that tenants within Office 365 can be different versions. There is a rollout strategy that Microsoft is getting very good at, and so we're speeding API changes and bits to the different tenants. But there may be an instance, if you try to divide up your ALM process across multiple tenants, that you're not deployed to the same bits, right? So the API versions are going to be subject to rollout change. So for example, if we introduce new features and you're counting on that feature being in it's in your integration environment tenant, it may not be deployed to your testing environment or your production environment tenant. So you want to be conscientious of where you do your testing. Our recommendation is to do that in the same tenant as your quote-unquote production environment. We just segregate those by different site collections so that you're all running on the same platform and the same code, the same version of SharePoint. Regression testing should cover provider-hosted infrastructure as well. So running the build verification tests are terrific, but you also want to make sure that whatever your SLAs, your RPOs, your RTOs, and your uptime or high availability is for SharePoint Online, or for your on-premises SharePoint, your infrastructure should be able to support that from a provider-hosted perspective. And then there are two types of testing. There's coded testing, coded UI testing, which is valuable, but you can also actually conduct non-coded UI testing as well. We want to check back or keep moving?
I'll do
another slide.
Yeah, do it now.
So this is basically kind of a visual depiction of what I talked about. And all of this, by the way, is in a white paper, which we have at the end of the at the slide deck. But this is basically in Office 365. You're executing and deploying code and executing tests against either an Office 365 SharePoint Online environment as its development site collection or an on-premises farm. This is also how you would conduct unit tests. This is a much more robust overview of testing. So in this scenario, as you've seen, Team Foundation Server Visual Studio Online will deploy as part of the build definitions into a Office 365 or an on-premises integration systems environment or a UAT environment. Now, the reason why we're bringing this point up here is because typically the integration systems environment systems test environment will have higher churn. This environment at the top lives only to make sure that we can run coded UI tests and that TFS can tell us when, as a result of those tests, when the build breaks. You can have separate build definitions for each one of these, or you can actually make a parameter change in the files of the PS1 files and have it deployed to either or. Typically, what we're going to see is that you can have SharePoint TFS deployed to your UAT environment, but you'll typically see a more stable build and refresh cycle in that environment as actual live human beings will be conducting UAT in that environment. So you're not going to want to have the up-to-date churn that you'll see in your integration environment. And in many instances, this is really where we bring release management in. So the people that, if you're deploying on-prem, that are going to be touching the servers shouldn't be developers. And the goal would be for them to, as early on, to see how the actual app gets deployed into production by testing it from a release management perspective in your UAT environment. So these folks will actually be able to take the packages, run the PowerShell scripts, pretend like they're, you know, TFS, and actually see and validate the build as it goes into the UAT environment. And then obviously we'll do the same thing with the cloud-hosted environments as well.
Okay.
Ready to switch back?
Yeah.
All right, let's see if our oven is
It's still
working.
Taking time, so I'll switch to the third demo, and we can check later how it works. Okay, in our third demo, we'll be also exploring automated testing. So we will take the first demo or the app that we have used in the first demo, and we'll be building upon the build definition. So we have a build definition called BD, build deploy. We will end up having BDT, build deploy and test workflow. And we'll be using coded UI testing and all of the stuff that Eric has just mentioned. In our scenario, a developer has checked in some bad code into source control, which caused regression. And the testing team has reported that there are some blocking issues and that the app now is unstable. So what I'm going to do now before wearing the tester's hat and start testing the new build is I want to quickly explore and introduce you to Microsoft Test Manager. Do you guys know it? Yeah?
Some people.
Yeah, Microsoft Test Manager for a tester is like Visual Studio for a developer. They use it in their day-to-day activities. Here I have a test plan called regression, and regression is basically a test plan for regression testing and build verification testing. I've configured my environment for manual tests and automated tests, and I've created something called a virtual test lab called integration and system testing. If I click manage, here's my integration system testing, and it's ready now to accept deployments and automated execution of test cases. I can always create environments. An environment can have more than one machine. In my case, I'm using a very simple scenario, SharePoint hosted app. One machine is enough for me. I'll go back, and now one step is left before I start executing tests, which is assigning a build to the current test plan. And this is important for two reasons. The first one is that as we move forward with testing, it's important and when we discover bugs, it's important for traceability reasons to log the bug against a specific build. That's why I need to make sure that I'm using the latest build here. And I'll assign it to my plan. This is the latest one. Close and save. Another reason, which is very important, is that as part of test execution, TFS will push some components, like test automation DLLs, from the drop folder or from the build output folder to the testing environment. So if we are using an old build, this means that the test automation DLLs are not the latest on my testing environment, and this will cause failure for the test cases. Okay, I'll go back to my testing center. And here I have a regression test suite, which has some manual test cases, and I have a test suite called BVT, build verification tests. Here's my here's my test case. And in my test case, we'll find that here I have my test script, so I need to navigate to the portal, then go to the app, create a new league, and now type. It's like a test script that the testers use, the testers already use. But here we have a parameter called league name, and this is one of the advantages of Microsoft Test Manager. You can parameterize your test case and start passing values to the test case. So for example, here I have Premier League as a parameter that will be sent to replace the league name, and I can create another one, let's say Egyptian League. I'll give it a name, I'll save it. Now my test case has a data source. I'll close it, and now I need to start my manual tests. So now again, I'm wearing the tester hat and trying manually verify the build. I'll run my test case, and now it opens Microsoft Test Runner. Microsoft Test Runner is the Microsoft's tool for manual testing. I'll click Create Action Recording, which is another important point. We need to check this box if we want to automate and if we want to replay our test cases. And you'll see momentarily how we can do the automation part. I'll start my test, and now follow the test steps. The first one is to navigate to the portal using a new browser instance. I'll open IE, and as a tester, I'll say this passed. Go to Sports League Manager app, click here, and this also passes. Click Create New League, and this passes. Type a league name, and I'll just press Control V. I don't have to type the parameter. And here we'll see that we have a little yellow cylinder, which means that this parameter has been bound now to this UI element or to this text box. And this passes. Click Add League. This passes. Go to Home. This passes again. Click Leagues. Click View Leagues. And now there's an expected result. Our expected result is that the newly added league should be here in the combo box. But this failed. I cannot see any leagues. Now I'll close the browser, and this one passes. I'll end the iteration and move to the next one, because we have two iterations. We had two parameter values. And I'll start now the test. But this time, I'll choose steps from 1 to 7, and click play. This now will replay my test case. Here are my hands. The test case is being replayed.
Nothing up your sleeve.
And see, it's now, yeah, it tried to add the second row, the Egyptian league. And here I don't have anything, so this fails also. Is this considered automated test? No, actually, this is not automated. I did a replay for my test case, but I still needed human intervention to say that this league has not been added to the combo box, right? In my next step, I'll show you how to fully automate this and include this as part of the build definition. Okay, so now I will wear the developer hat and I'll go to my dev environment, try to reproduce the issue. Let's say that the tester has logged this as a bug on TFS and I went to TFS and I saw this and I need now to reproduce the issue. I'll go to create new league, add league, home. Oh yeah, this is not working. So I need to fix it.
So it's a verified bug.
Yeah, the bug is now verified. Go to the apps.js, and I think I know where the issue is. Yeah, someone commented this line by mistake, and I need now to redeploy the app. Let me show you a trick for redeploying the app, or not redeploying the app, deploying this fix. I have here a third party called Fast Deploy to SharePoint App. This only copies this file. Instead of uninstalling and installing the app, I'll just use this trick. And let's start Visual Studio, go to the dev environment, and see if this fixes the issue. Create new league. And this has been fixed. Okay, so it's fixed now on my development environment. But I'm not going to check this code into source control because I need while wearing the developer's hat, to fully automate my test case. For this, I have an empty test project. I'll add a new coded UI test. And it's asking me whether you want to record your test case or you have an existing action recording. I have an existing action recording because I have performed manual testing. And I have a query here for my build verification tests. And here's my test case, the one that I've executed manually. Make sure that if a new league is added, it shows in the league list. Click OK. And now the code, and now the test case or the recording is being converted into code. For each test step, we have a line of code. We also have a data source. This data source refers back to our parameters, our parameter values, the records that I'm using for driving the test case. And here's how the parameter values are passed to my test case using the test context. Okay, but still I need to, and the good thing about converting this into code is that you can further enhance the test case. You can add validation logic. So for automating the test case, we need to add a validation logic. So I'm going to generate code for my coded UI test. I'll use the coded UI test builder. This opens Microsoft coded UI test builder. I'll quickly go to my, I need to make sure now that this combo box contains the added league. So I'll use this crosshair tool in Microsoft coded UI test builder. Select the control that I want to validate. Choose the property, which should be inner text. This inner text should contain all the values. And click Add Assertion. I want to make sure that the inner text contains the value of the league name. And I don't know it, so I'm going to say dummy value. I will fix this later. And generate code. Add and generate. close the coded UI test builder. And now we have this method. I want to pass this value, league name, to the assert method, because now it uses the hard-coded value. Go to definition, and let's say league name, and this is the dummy value. And let's pass the league name. Now my test case has been fully automated. I can test my test, of course, but just to save some time, I'll just rebuild my project, and it built successfully. Go to my build verification test and associate this DLL or automation DLL to my test case. Here's my coded UI test. Save. Now the test has been automated. I can run it from Microsoft Test Manager, but I want to add it to my build workflow. 15 minutes left? Yeah.
7.
Okay. I can, of course, add it to my build workflow, but since we don't have time, I will show you how we can use it from Microsoft Test Manager. There is one step that we need to do, which is assigning. If we have a new build, we need to assign the new build to the test plan. Since we didn't trigger any build, let's first check this into our source control. And you can always come here, refresh this. If I go to the plan, open the test case, we'll see that automation status is now automated. And when you create, the last tip that I want to show you, I forgot to show you how to run the test case. You can come from here and from the test tab and run the test case. Run with options, it's using the automation configurations. So it's using the target environment integration system testing, and it's using these test settings. Last tip before I turn back to Eric, is when you create a build deploy test workflow, there is this build definition or build process template called lab default. And the lab default template is very straightforward. Here is the process or the wizard. You need to select the environment. Choose your build definition. Choose the build scripts to deploy the app. Click deploy. Okay. Then go your test and choose your test cases. Here I have my build verification tests. Click OK, finish, and now you can run continuous integration. Okay. Thank you.
So I think what you've seen is really powerful. I mean, I'm adopted multiple hats, but I think it's nothing new to anybody here, right? And I think what you've seen is that as a tester, you begin tests in and find bugs using manual test cases. What you've seen is the power of being able to take those manual test cases and convert them into automated tests, deploy the app, and actually test for the exact thing that was broken and actually provide those results so that the actual original tester can see it and mark that bug retired. Just wrapping up, so we're going to talk about the last topic is what the perception is around apps and what the release model looks like for SharePoint. So we're on an evergreen release cycle, right? So the old model used to have very large drops of SharePoint. So what you've seen in the past is like there were SharePoint 2003, 2007, 2010. We're now entering an era in which we're not going to do these giant drops anymore. Certainly we're going to still have major releases of the product, but the upgrade cycles are not necessarily going to be as predictable as that anymore. We actually might see an instance where that looks like this. Like, so for example, at the keynote, we saw that we're going to add new features to SharePoint. So you'll see multiple deployments of features and API changes into Office 365 in between major revisions of the product. Now, what that means for developers is that you can choose how and when your apps are updated. That you no longer have to, you can adopt the same strategy. Programming against an evergreen platform, if you see an implementation where we've deepened the API, or there's a smarter way to write your app now because Office 365 is better about exposing itself, you can actually do that and deploy that. You don't actually have to wait for your customization or for a large drop of SharePoint into the cloud. Customizations don't block new capabilities from SharePoint, and I think that's important because we're in the app model space, we're running outside of SharePoint. And the goal is for you to be able to think about being able to release features and functionalities in an accelerated fashion. And you don't have to wait for these big bang releases. So from a resources perspective, just wrapping up today, we have a listing of the SharePoint ALM guidance, which kind of spawned this session. It's a paper that I had the ability to contribute with some of our top ALM experts. So the white paper is there. So if you want to get deeper around testing methodologies, build and development environments, and learning the considerations that we weren't able to cover in this session, that paper has it. And if you want to grab those SharePoint build resources from CodePlex, that's the link there.
I think I need to say,
you want to switch back?
A little tip, yeah?
Yep.
So something that... a good resource also. Remember when Eric was saying about
after
deployment? Yeah, this is something that I forgot to mention.
This is the promise.
Yeah. When you, after you do a build and deployment, there is a challenge for automated testing to run, right? Which is you need someone to manually trust your app, correct? So that you can start manual testing or even automated testing. And for this, and if you want to have this process fully automated, you need to automatically trust the app. And this is actually not supported, or there is no way through PowerShell or through .NET CSOM that you can do this. For this, we've came up with a trick that can help you automatically trust the app. So it's build, deploy, trust, then test the app through PowerShell using the IE automation. So, and I've blogged about this on my blog here. Here I'm retrieving the URL of the app information page, then actually using IE to go to this page, searching for the trust button, then clicking it. Yeah, and that's it. After you add this code to your deployment script, now after the app is deployed, it's being trusted automatically, then you can proceed with manual testing or automated testing.
Yep, this was a big pain in trying to enable a completely automated solution. So you saw Eamon earlier in his demo, he had to click the trusted button. Microsoft is making some investments. This is a great workaround until those investments actually materialize. So from a call to action, I'm sure you guys have seen this slide. Definitely check into our new preview APIs. As you start thinking about developing your apps, you can connect with the community. Actually, a lot of the product team managers, if you don't know about user voice, are actually on that and responding to feedback and taking feedback. Definitely build using our tools. Build using Visual Studio 2013, use Office 365 developer sites, that's it. Oh, we have some developer goodies up here. So there's only like 3 shirts, so it's whoever comes up best. This guy raised his hand, so he's going to get one. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, we'll stick around for the last few minutes. But
thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. We have you.
The shirt is the working on a shirt, which instantly gives you developer street cred, by the way.
Yeah.
And then, all going. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.